Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Nobody expects to become a caregiver for someone they love, but many of us will do just that at some point in our lives. This is exactly what happened to George Shannon when his wife Carol suffered a stroke while they were on vacation. It set off a 7-year chain of events that he says were filled with a series of medical and personal challenges that would relentlessly test their resolve. Every day, Shannon says he would work to help Carol meet her needs, and every night, he would go to bed wondering whether he had done enough. Well, Naples part-time resident George Shannon, along with his co-author and son, Chad Patrick Shannon, just published a new memoir that explores the unexpected rewards that can come from being a caregiver, which he calls gifts that have left him a better, happier, and more fulfilled man. The best 7 years of my life is the tale of an unlikely caregiver, a journey to rediscovering humility, and the story of a man blessed with the chance to fall in love all over again. George Shannon, welcome to Gulf Coast Live, and thanks so much for coming in to share your story with us.
Thank you for having me. For sure.
As always, we'd like to add your voice to our discussion, so give us a call now if you'd like to at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So let's start from the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your wife, Carol. What was she like? What did she do? And how long had you been married?
We were married for 48 years. And Carol was just she was 4'10". Mm-hmm. And she had these big, beautiful blue eyes that just popped out at you. And she was a very humble, deferring person. Carol always did what I wanted to do. That was our whole life. And that's part of the story, the transformation, the love and transformation that took place with Carol when Carol got sick.
It's kind of like you traded places.
Sort of, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of the story, there was the night that she suffered the stroke. Where were you when this happened?
We were in Cabos, Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I find Carol, I woke up at 4:00 in the morning and went into the bathroom, not expecting to see what I found. I just thought that she might have gone to the bathroom and was delayed getting out. And I found her sitting Indian style on the floor, staring at the ceiling with a smile on her face. And I said, "What's happening, Carol? What's wrong?" And she just looked at me and smiled and looked back at the ceiling. Well, she had had, this was in April 2010, and she had had small strokes, TIAs, in 2008 and 2009. So I recognized the symptoms of a stroke.
Okay.
So I knew what was going on.
So you weren't necessarily surprised, but this is a more shocking turn. This is more serious.
It was definitely more serious. Yeah.
So how long was it before you knew that she was going to be needing full-time care?
It took us the better part of a day to get Carol back to Pittsburgh, and I wanted to get her back. I didn't know what the quality of care was in Mexico. I didn't know if my insurance would cover it.
How do you do a transport from Mexico?
I hired a private plane.
Yeah.
And that was the only way I could get her home. I knew the commercial airlines weren't going to take her, and I wasn't knowledgeable enough to ask for a medical transport. So I just made some phone calls and hired a private plane.
Well, that's the time to max out the credit card, right?
It really did.
That would be the day.
Yes, it did. It for sure did.
So was there any doubt in your mind that you would be the one that would be providing the care for her when it dawned on you that that was going to be necessary?
Okay, when we were flying home, Carol was sitting directly across from me about 4 feet away. And this took us 13 hours of flying to get home. And she just sat and stared at me. And she couldn't speak, and she couldn't comprehend everything that was going on. And she had that smile on her face, and she was just staring at me. And I kept looking at her, and I kept thinking to myself, what she's trying to say to me is, I trust you. I'm in trouble, and I just trust you to fix this for me. And that's the message I got. And it was at that point that I was looking at her saying to myself, I'm not sure I've been a good enough husband for 40 years, 41 years, but I'm going to start now, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to take care of Carol.
Maxing out another credit card, correct? Like a personal, emotional one. This is the time to do it if you're going to do it, right? So you're flying back. You had this look. You could see what was going on. Is that how Carol remained?
She was in the hospital for a week being diagnosed, of course, and some of the issues that Carol had were a balance. She couldn't walk very well. She had a stroke that damaged the left side of her body. And she was in a hospital for a week, and then she was in a rehab facility for 3 weeks doing occupational speech and physical therapy. And she was recovering nicely, and we expected a full recovery in 6 months to a year. She was out of the rehab center for 4 days and had another stroke, and it was a bad one. It affected the basal ganglia area of her brain, and she then had trouble swallowing. She had trouble walking. She had trouble talking, and it was a longer road back from that. And that's when I realized that I had to dedicate the rest of my life to take care of Carol.
You were going into retirement at this point, right?
That's correct.
So what was your daily routine like?
With Carol after she was out of the hospital?
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was first of all, Carol had type 2 diabetes, and so she had some other issues, and she had some bladder issues. And so through the night, Carol would get up out of bed. I would have to get her up out of bed 4 or 5 times a night. Mm-hmm. So every couple of hours, we'd get up and go to the bathroom. Chad estimated in the book that in the 7-year period that I got up with her 12,000 times, just from the time we went to bed to the time we got up the next morning to go to the bathroom. And so that's the way our night was. In the morning, then I had to give her medications. I had to give her a shot for her diabetes and her medications. And I had to test her blood sugar. And then I had to prepare breakfast for her. And then I had to bathe her and get her ready for the day. And then typically, we would have a couple of doctor's appointments or we'd go to rehab. So it was a full day built around medical needs.
It ended up being more than a full-time job, 24 hours a day. Yeah. In your book, you described that your wife's personality changed after the stroke. Can you describe a little of that change?
It did. It actually changed. It was a pleasant change. My wife, I was – in the 41 years we were married, I always had my way. It's just the way our relationship was. She was very – she always deferred to me. No matter what I wanted to do, we did it. And she never pushed back. After she had the strokes, all of a sudden she started pushing back and her personality changed. And I'm not a medical person, so I can't tell you exactly why, but she was getting feisty. She was fighting back with me. She was telling me things that she's never said before. She was expressing herself. And she became hilarious because she was doing the funniest darn things. And most of them I can't repeat on the air.
Oh, but, I was going to ask.
there's one good story. We live in Pittsburgh, and we were going to the Pittsburgh Pirate baseball game, and we got close to the stadium, and she was sitting in the passenger seat, and I'm driving, of course. And there was a traffic jam. And there was only one lane open, and the right lane was – nobody was using the right lane. I couldn't understand why. Well, I peeked around the corner, and there was an ambulance sitting in the right lane, not active, just sitting there, two EMTs just sitting there with their windows down watching life go by, waiting for something to happen. Well, in my personality, I'm screaming and yelling at the windshield the whole way down, and we're just bumping down the road, bumping down the road, bumping down the road. And I finally pull up next to the ambulance, and the ambulance driver has his left arm out the window, and he looks over at me, and I look to the right, and I look over at him, and my wife reaches over and hits the window button, and the window slides down, and I'm looking this guy right in the eye, and my wife says, "You got anything to say now?"
So I said, nice. She challenged you to say something.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to yell at the guy.
Oh, no. She said to me, "You got anything to say now?" I said, "Put the window up, would you please?" So those are the kind of things that she did all of a sudden in life that she never did before. So she became absolutely hysterical. And it, you know, it brings up a point. The point is that, you know, when this type of an existence, it really is unrelenting. It's 24/7. But it can be good too. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be sad. It can be happy. You can laugh a lot if you look for the good in the situation.
Well, you wrote toward the end of the book, quote: "By giving my life over to my wife's, I'd knocked out my lifelong defenses and opened myself up to the possibility of unconditional love." Can you reflect on that a little bit for me? Because you'd been married already for 40 some years.
We were married for 41 years when she had her stroke. And the doctors indicated that she may live a year or two, and she actually lived 7 years. But what happened is, as I said earlier, it was always about me. It was about what we did. It's what I always wanted to do, not necessarily what she wanted to do. She just always went along with it. And so I was taking care of Carol. And at the end of the day, I was questioning whether I was doing it for the right reasons, right? And, you know, I would take care of Carol and I would worry. I'd say to myself, you know, I didn't play golf with my buddies today, or I didn't go out and have a drink with my buddies today. And so it became about me. And then I realized that if I'm going to do this right, then I have to make it about her. I have to do everything, make it all about her. And so when I decided to do that, I had a change in my heart. I became very humble because it wasn't about me anymore. It was all about her. And I felt so good about it. And what happened is my heart and my soul just opened up. And you could feel the connection between Carol and I. It was an amazing event. I knew that I loved Carol, and we had a good relationship. But I know that I could have gone deeper with love. And that's what happened when I found the humility. And our relationship changed immediately. We fell madly in love with each other all over again.
Probably the last thing you expected.
The last thing I expected. I just went into this with I got to do the best I can, which is the way pretty much I do everything. I just roll up my sleeves and I get after it, right? And I find out what I have to do and I try to do it as best I can. I never expected the emotional transformation that took place in me. That's what the story is about. That's
well, you
what
knew
the
that,
book's about.
You knew that there's going to be the mechanics of the daily, got to do this, got to get up, got to get the breakfast ready, got to go to this doctor's appointment and stuff like that. And then you kind of go into like an autopilot kind of, I'm going to get it done because I'm getting it done. And then this whole emotional thing just kind of came like out of nowhere, seems like.
It did. And I was wondering, you know, I would go to bed at night. I'd do all these things all day long and go to bed at night and wonder whether I did enough for Carol. And then every once in a while she'd tap me on the shoulder. I had to hold her hand and walk everywhere because she'd fall. And so she would always tap me on the shoulder and say, thank you for everything you do for me.
Yeah.
Or she would say, you're too good to me. And she did that constantly. And so the emotional connection just started to happen because we were with each other 24/7, and I was not showing frustration. I was doing everything I could for her, and I wasn't doing much for myself. And she sensed that, and she knew that. And then when I found the humility part of my life, that's when it really changed me. The switch just went on, and I just said, you know what? This is my life. And I find I had to be in the moment, Julie. I had to be in the moment all the time because being in the moment means that I was doing things for Carol and only for Carol and not for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed in the moment all the time. I never worried about tomorrow. I never worried about 10 minutes ago. I never worried about what I was missing out on. And it was the transformation that took place that made all the difference in the world, our relationship.
Well, there's another transformation, though, that takes place, and that's when ultimately the person that you've been caring for all this time and that's become the center of what you're doing every day passes away. Now, Carol passed away in April of 2018. Were you prepared for that at all?
I wasn't.
And then your life changed again because now
Carol, it was actually 2017. It was April of 2017. It'll be 2 years this April. And the fact that I spent 24/7 with her, you think you're prepared, but you're not. You're never prepared. And all of a sudden she was gone. And so it changed everything for me. And I continued to reflect on whether I had done enough. And I have three sons, and I asked my sons for forgiveness because I didn't think I did enough. And they all said, Dad, there's nothing to forgive you for. You did a beautiful job. You should be so proud of yourself. And so I've gone through that journey. My one son that lives in Pittsburgh at the time saw part of this. He would come over for weekends and he would give me a break once in a while. And he was really close with his mom. And he witnessed this whole thing for 7 years up front. He lived with us for a year too. And he's also a writer, and he's always wanted me to write a book. Mm-hmm. And my career was sales and marketing. I didn't want to write a book about sales and marketing. There's so many of those books on the shelves, right? I mean, I was just going to regurgitate the same old thing. And so after about 5 years, I said to Chad, I said, you know, if you want to write a book, let's write a book about caregiving. Let's do a book let's tell people what I've learned in 5 years about being a caregiver, about the medical profession, the insurance companies, the rehab facilities, and all the other things. So he came over and he interviewed me for about 2 or 3 hours and put it all on tape. And he sends me the first chapter. And I read the first chapter and I couldn't stop crying. And I called him. I said, Chad, what are you doing? This is not a do-it-yourself caregiver book. This is a love story. He said, Dad, it is a love story. I've seen it. I've been part of it. And it's a story that needs to be told. And that's how we started writing the book.
He sounds like a good writer.
It was a wonderful writer.
To be able to identify what the real story is.
You're not going to believe. You're not going to believe it's his first book.
Well, that's the biggest thing is getting what the real story actually is. It's not a how-to. He knew it, and you were living it and didn't recognize that.
That's exactly right. He recognized it before I recognized it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful love story. And what it's done for my relationship with my son is just – it's something I can't even describe. I mean, we had a great relationship to begin with, but he's given me this book. He's given me something that nobody's ever going to take away from me. And it's something I cherish, and it's a legacy to his mom about how she lived her life and how she died. And it's a beautiful story.
It's also talking about something that a lot of people don't really feel comfortable talking about. Being a caregiver, and then that era ending, that time period ending, and that kind of loss, but then also rediscovery, and not a lot of people talk out loud about that. So I feel like it might. I mean, while it's been incredibly impactful to you and your own family, it might really have some resonance with a lot of people.
A lot of people have read this book. The book's been out for maybe 2 months, and a lot of people have already read this book. And I've had numerous people say to me, to my face, George, I've read your book and it's already changed my life. It's changed the way I think about my spouse. I even had a minister say that to me. He said, you've changed the way I sat last night with my wife and we talked about our relationship and it's already changed our relationship. And I decided to be very vulnerable in the book because I told Chad, I said, I have to be vulnerable to make it honest. And you need to be prepared to hear things about your father that might surprise you. But I'm not going to write a book and sugarcoat it. We're going to write a book. We're going to be vulnerable. We're going to tell the truth. And that makes the book real. And I talk a lot about in the book about the flaws in my personality for those 40 years and how I transformed that after Carol got sick and why I transformed it. And that's the storyline behind the book. The big message in this book is that we all have our lives to live, and things happen in our life that we don't always get to choose what happens to us. But what we do get to choose is how we respond to those things. And if you respond in a positive fashion, you can have happiness. I responded. There's a quote in the book by Robert Frost that says, the way out is through it. And when this happened, as Chad so well describes in the book, I was in a forest lost looking for a way out. I didn't know how to be a caregiver. I didn't know what was ahead of me. And I could have sat down and waited for help or find the way out. And I chose to find the goodness in things. I made a positive response to a bad situation and said, I'm going to find the good. And when I found the good is when the transformation started taking place between Carol and I.
It sounds like an incredible journey, and I'm really happy and honored that you came and kind of shared your story with me here. And I'm glad you're part of Naples, too, as a snowbird.
Well, thank you. And I think you understand I love talking about this story.
I can understand why.
And I'm so happy to be here to talk about it. I'm happy that people are listening to this and people are being inspired by this. I'm getting the most wonderful emails and phone calls from people. And I look forward to every opportunity to sit and talk about this book. So thank you for having me.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. That was George Shannon. He's the author of The Best 7 Years of My Life, The Story of an Unlikely Caregiver. George, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank my earlier guest, Jeff Becker, the 2018 Lee County School District Teacher of the Year. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.